Welcome to An Actor Despairs. I'm your host, Ryan Perez.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hope everyone is having an amazing spring and enjoyed the Oscars. Today on An Actor Despairs, we have Kai Alexander, and we're here to talk about his performance in Masters of the Air. It's an incredible show. If you know Steven Spielberg and Tom Hanks' other pieces, Band of Brothers and The Pacific Well, you'll love Masters of the Air. I'm sure you guys are hopefully already enjoying it. Kai is an awesome actor. His story's amazing, and I'm really grateful for him being here. Ladies and gentlemen, here it is.
Kai Alexander, welcome to An Actor Spares. How are you doing?
I am well, thank you, Ryan. How are you?
Oh, man, it's a pleasure to get to talk to you. I just got to watch a lot of your work, and I'm really excited, and you're carving out such a terrific path for yourself, and you got so many amazing things already done, but also a really big thing that's going to change the game, and you got, it seems like you got another project you're currently doing too, so I'm thrilled to talk to you, brother.
I'm excited.
Yeah, and you have the best teeth, perhaps, of any guest. I mean, those teeth are, I don't know if you guys have commercials in the UK, but you could just lend your teeth to, man. Way to break the British trope.
the teeth have, over the years, got a lot of attention. You know, I never had a brace on the top. I was blessed.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, man. Crazy. I had to have braces for like 3 years. God, I would have killed for that.
I had a brace on the bottom, but not the top. And it was just weird. This top, so strange. But
wow. Well, man, I'm so excited to have you here. We're going to have so much fun. And, you know, everyone that listens knows, and you might know as well, I usually like to start at the beginning. Where did you grow up?
So I grew up in the Midlands in the UK, so a town called Worcester.
We have one in Massachusetts.
Yeah. You do indeed. It's funny because now when I've done things in American and I say, you know, I'm from Worcester, people have sometimes thought that I mean the Massachusetts Worcester. And I'm like, yeah. No.
That's so funny. That's definitely like a departed Ben Affleck, you know, Boston crime city. Yeah.
Yeah. I grew up in Worcester. My family and all of their families are from that town. So, you know, for generations, they've all kind of been based there. Oh, and I spent the first 16 years of my life there.
So forgive me for being ignorant of British geography, but then what was it like growing up there? Is it a big town or is it a little bit more suburban or?
I mean, it's a medium sized city. It's Birmingham, which is a more popular place, is close to it. So that was kind of the
Peaky Blinders style.
Not exactly. Yeah. That's kind of the closest big city, to where Worcester is. And, you know, I think, you know, you certainly get that small community vibe, living there for sure.
And you and I were having a nice chat before we hit record, and you're the only child then. So talk to me then. Are your parents artists? How did this whole, you know, venture into acting and cinema start to happen for you?
So my mom was a dancer.
Oh, nice. That's I am not coordinated. That's respect to your mom.
Well, surprisingly, neither am I.
That's not true. You play the drums beautifully in Masters. Well,
musically, but... Yeah, dancing. I did a play actually in drama school later on where I was, because I was one of the only guys. So trying to find a play with seven, eight girls and one guy is not easy. And they found a play called Stepping Out. I don't know whether you know it. And
yeah, I've heard of it. I'd be lying.
It's about these group of people who go tap dancing and learn to tap dance. And I think, you know, they thought I'd be a lot better than I was. I was pretty bad at this tap dancing. Luckily, the character was also pretty bad.
Yeah.
But I did not, I did not inherit any of my mom's dancing skills, unfortunately. But she was certainly, the kind of performer aspect of her was certainly something that resonated and you know, fed down to me for sure. For sure.
What about your father? Was he, if not in it, did he have any interest in the arts? Like, were they curating your early childhood film, TV, consumption?
Definitely creative. My dad is not in any way involved in the industry at all, and I think we still surprise him every day to aspects of it. You know, he's still understanding it himself. But you know, they introduced me from a young age to, you know, some amazing films, without sort of knowing, cause I didn't know this was a career I wanted to do, until, you know, sort of teenage years, but certainly from a young age, one film that always springs to mind is E.T. I always remember that as being one of the first films that sort of, you know, I remembered, and it made me cry. It made me emotional. And it was sort of the first time I kind of felt emotional about something that wasn't necessarily reality. And, you know, something that was so, you know, that drew you in into the screen, you know, and it wasn't reality. It was the first time I remember being sort of drawn in. So films like that were certainly sort of shown and still stick in the mind today from a very early age, for sure.
That's beautiful, man. And one of the things that I find myself very envious of about, you know, British culture is that you guys, you know, you have such amazing theater, even outside of London, and youth theater and all of these wonderful groups, you know, perhaps even in, sometimes I've spoken to guests that have it in early education at their own school. You know, was that something that you ever started young, even though maybe not getting committed to it yet, but were you aware of, you know, obviously it's a futile question to ask if you're aware of Shakespeare, but, you know, the great British lineage of the West End and all that. Did you ever see shows growing up going to London?
Yeah. So again, leading on from that, you know, being shown these amazing films by my parents, you know, we always used to kind of, because obviously with my mom's dancing heritage, we watched a lot of musicals. I remember coming down, you know, seeing things like Phantom of the Opera, Les Mis. I was shown those very early and young, and the play kind of, you know, plays and things came to me later on. Sort of the early education, obviously with the dancing things, was musicals for me. And that's what I remember sort of growing up, and even locally as well, things like that, you know, performances that were happening either in Birmingham or within the town I grew up. We'd always try and go and see them for sure.
Wow, that's awesome. And then, you know, before you got in, what, you know, what were you doing as a kid? What were your interests? Is there a time you could shift back to and, like, you originally thought you were going to go down a different path?
Yeah, I mean, you know, initially, you know, the kind of, I still am today a huge Formula One fan. And
no way. That's awesome, man. Yeah. I love Formula One. That's so rad.
Oh, yeah. Man. And like from a young age, initially, that was, you know, go-karting was something I used to do all the time. And like, you know, competitively, and I used to do, you know, go to championships and things like that. And that was kind of the first thing that I really kind of was really keen to kind of pursue. But you know, that kind of got to a point where I did a national championship, and, you know,
I know we're here to talk about acting, but talk about that, man. This is so fascinating. I've never had a guest. I've always been so curious how you even get into it.
Yeah, I did this because I always liked Formula One, and for like my birthday one year, my parents took me to this go-kart track because I always wanted to do it. And, you know, I can't remember how old I was, but, and, you know, I just used to go round and round and round. I used to just love it. And then, you know, I was okay. I was, you know, I wasn't that bad. And, you know, and then they held every weekend, they held races and qualifyings and things like that. So I used to just start going to those, and then I started, obviously from there, then I started competing a little bit. And then, you know, for a few years, I kind of carried on in that way. And then, you know, I did a national championship, and I reckon I was about 10, 11, at this time. And I kind of did it, and it was the first time I kind of was driving, and I was obviously with people from across the UK, and I started to see them going around the track in, you know, what appeared to be the same way that I was going, but they were just going so much faster.
Yeah.
And it was the first time I couldn't understand how they were doing it. And it was kind of a little bit of a realization moment, was like, they've got something else. You know, they have something that I don't understand. I didn't understand how they were going through the corner in certain ways. And yeah. I remember literally to this day being in that race and thinking, these people are a lot faster than me. And I'm not sure I'm not sure this is something that I, you know, I can reach the level that I would love to reach.
Yeah.
So it was a weird early realization, but that was certainly my first love.
Well, that's incredible. Thank you for sharing that. And I imagine that really set the precedent for adrenaline. So then where did the, and how did the pivot happen?
Well, I think from, because it was always there from with music. So music.
Okay,
was,
so you did do music young.
It was
okay.
Underscored. Yeah. I mean, I learned
drums?
The piano. Drums was second. So I learned the piano when I was four or five, very young. That was the first instrument I learned. And, you know, I played that kind of throughout the time that I was still doing go-karting. So I always had that musical aspect. But the drums came after. The drums came around sort of 10, 11, 12. I can't remember specifically. But I had an education through my granddad, who was a huge jazz fan and had all these old records and vinyls of jazz that used to be on all the time. Every time I went around to his house, he was just constantly absorbed in this jazz world from bizarrely the 40s, yeah. Which proved very useful.
When I was going to say, I'm glad you said it. Yeah.
It proved very useful when I came to do masters. Yeah. But you know, before I actually physically learned the drums, he used to sort of, he never played a single instrument in his life, but the rhythm he had was insane, like the natural musical rhythm. And he used to put these sort of pans out, pots and pans, on the kitchen table, and we used to just get like utensils and just sort of smash out a rhythm and play a rhythm to these on these pans. So I was kind of that was kind of the first introduction to drums, just from playing pots and pans. And then I sort of started to get a rhythm for it and thought I'd explore the full size kit.
Yeah.
Around the age of sort of 11, 12.
I can only imagine, you know, between knowing piano and drums, the incredible seismic effect that's had on acting, because knowing rhythm is everything, you know, when reading a script and performing. So then where did the catalyst happen? Was there a play you saw, a film you saw, or a class you attended where the window of pursuing this really started open to you?
So I did. So after I'd finished the go-karting, I went into child modeling a little bit. I did a little bit of modeling. I took another just complete.
Yeah, hell of a handsome man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that led me to a TV commercial for Honey Waffles, which are sugar. This is a spin-off of the Sugar Puff brand, which I don't think you guys have in America.
We have something called Eggos. You guys have Eggos?
No, I'm not. No, Eggos.
They're like frozen waffles you put in a toaster and they come out.
But this is kind of like a tiny cereal kind of thing.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Yeah. But like that was it's a very culty cereal in the UK. So like they always used to do these adverts, and it comes with this big ginger bear. And he is the
honey. Oh, so it has the character. We have the same thing here. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, it was a very culty cereal, which had a very sort of historic line of ads. So this audition came up, and it was the recall, the callback for that, where I kind of had this epiphany. It was the director of this advert was Garth Jennings. He'd just come off doing Son of Rambo,
wow.
You know, and Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy before that. And I was, you know, I met him in the room, and he kind of said, let's do this improvisation, you know, where we're just going to pretend that we're hiding the honey monster under the table, and then your mom's going to come in, and you just got to, you know, make up a load of excuses as to where he is. And we kind of just did this improvisation, and it was the first time I'd ever kind of done anything like that. You know, I'd never really done or being given the sort of freedom to kind of perform in this way, act in this way, or experience that before. And it was like a light bulb went off, and I was just like, this is really, you know, it felt very natural. And it felt very, you know, it felt like I was in control, even though I was very nervous. It just felt like I had ideas and I had things that I wanted to try. And it was just so exciting. And that was always what I attribute as the moment. I was like, this is something that now I want to explore for sure.
And in that moment, do you think it was the improv, the deviation from the script and being able to be free? Like, what particularly about that moment do you think really just was so electric for you? Because it sounds like it was such a beautiful experience.
Yeah, I think, as I said, I think it was the case of like not having ever tested this type of muscle before. And it was like finding something entirely new and having someone who you were, because I'd seen Son of Rambo, and, you know, having someone who you were kind of aware was, you know, so significant in an industry, have the sort of confidence in you to say, no, you can do this, and throw ideas and sort of that element of control that was being handed to me. And, you know, it just, as I said, it felt very comfortable and natural while being nervous. It felt very safe.
Wow. And thank you for sharing that. And obviously you booked a commercial. How was shooting it?
I did. Yeah. It was very fun. It was very fun. It's the first time I'd ever kind of been on any kind of film set.
Was the character practical or CGI?
It's practical. It's practical.
Wow, so even cool. You got to work with an actor on it.
Yeah. So there is one man who wears the full, they have like three, I think it's three or four suits, kind of up, that go up in scale of quality, you know, like depending on how close or far away the shot is. And there's one guy that operates the main suit. That's it. And, you know, he's in the suit, and then there's this animatronic head. It's just fascinating. And because it's being able to have the real thing there is hugely helpful and
game changing. You know, and once you did that, then I imagine, you know, then the bug, if not already from the audition, is fully instilled in you. Do you go to your mom and your dad and try to figure out ways to kind of continue, if not even just commercial auditioning, getting into theater and maybe perhaps film and TV?
Yeah, I mean, that was absolutely, as you said, as soon as I did that and as soon as I'd been on the set, it was like, this is something now I want to explore. And, you know, I then went back to school, and obviously that was kind of a time when I sort of started
non-drama school, right?
You know, this was non-drama.
Okay.
So then I started sort of putting myself forward for school plays and you know, doing drama in classes. And I started making these videos with my friend as well, and where he, you know, my friend was really good at, he had this camera, this video camera, and he was really good at sort of like parkour and like backflips and scooter tricks and bike tricks and trampoline stuff, all those kind of, you know, cool tricks that seemed so impossible. He was really cool at them. And we started creating these videos where he would do the trick really well, and then I would go and attempt the same thing, but do it really badly, and sort of it looked like I've really hurt myself. And, you know, we used to stop, you know, creating these videos and showing them to everybody, because, you know, it was that kind of entertainment aspect of things that all of a sudden I, you know, I loved the idea of being able to make people laugh, and, you know, this just by being silly and stupid and hurting myself, and people seem to enjoy it. So, you know, I started kind of in that aspect as well. And, you know, I didn't even think about that aspect of it until really this week. I remembered that was a part of my acting journey, even though I'd completely forgotten about it until this week. And I started thinking about, you know, where it all began. And, you know, it's weird because you don't attribute everything, because you think that you're not, I don't think that I was acting, but in a way that it was creation, content creation in a different
performance
concept.
Yeah.
So all of that kind of happened through those teenage years, and obviously doing school plays and stuff. I never really got many main parts. Really, in fact, I didn't get one. But I just enjoyed every aspect of being involved in a performance. Like, if I wasn't in the show, if I didn't get cast, I did the lights, you know, or I put myself forward for the band or something like that. I always wanted to then just be involved in some way, shape or form. And that was kind of through my teenage years. And then when I was 16 and I was sort of starting to get serious about what I wanted to do moving forward in my life, I made the decision to see if I would be able to get into drama school at that age.
Wow.
So for what we call sixth form college in the UK.
Can you talk about, you know, because I've had a lot of, actually, I think even the vast majority of my guests have been British. Were you thinking like RADA, Guildhall, you know, drama set, like all of these, or?
So not all of them do sort of that younger sixth form age. Most of them start at 18. Okay. So there are only a few that did sort of from 16. And I auditioned for, there was three.
Can you name them? There's a lot of British guests. That's why.
One in Birmingham, actually. I auditioned for one in Birmingham called Boa, and then two in London called Art's Ed and Tring. And I got into all of them. And that was kind of, the process of auditioning was my way of testing myself against other people. Because prior to that, I was in my small town, and I was trying to kind of gauge whether, you know, you had no gauge of,
how to be the best and whether you are or not, so to speak.
In the same way that I had the experience with the go-karting and the national thing. As soon as I got to the national thing and I realized, you know, there was a disparity and, you know, I wasn't going to necessarily be able to reach that. And I wanted to do the same thing with the acting. I wanted to see, right, okay, if this is something that I really want to do, I need to be able to test myself against all the other people who want to do it as well and see, you know, and see if there's something there. And that was kind of what led me to do that. And then I did, you know, very fortunately get in
Sorry to interrupt. Was it a classical and contemporary monologue for the audition?
I did, yes, a classical and a contemporary. I did. Let me see if I can remember.
No worries, if you can't.
I think I did something from A Midsummer Night's Dream.
Wow.
And I think it might, or Twelfth Night. I can't remember which one I did.
It's okay. And
Twelfth Night or Midsummer Night's Dream, and then I did a piece from a play called DNA by Dennis Kelly.
Wow.
Which is an amazing play.
And having had that audition experience with a commercial and then being in the room with those people and, you know, as someone who has auditioned for drama school and gotten in and went to masters and called back but didn't get in, it can be really intimidating. Do you feel like you found a bit of a harder time, perhaps this time where it's so formal, the setting is like, do this, do that, get out. They can, I don't know how they were for you, be cold, and you don't really have a gauge until you find out if you get in or not.
Yeah, absolutely. I had no idea. Because as I said, like in preparing these pieces, I did the same pieces for my drama GCSE. So I had absolutely no gauge of whether I was any good at all. You know, I had absolutely no gauge. And as you say, and when you go and do the audition, they give nothing away.
Yeah.
And the Shakespeare and the non-Shakespeare piece, they give you nothing away. And you do a workshop as well, and they don't really give anything away. But you see other people in the workshop, and you kind of, you know, you just don't really know, because you have no idea what they look for. You have no idea what is the right way to do things. I walked away knowing that I'd done what I wanted to. I'd shown them what I wanted to show them.
Yeah.
And you know, I've been prepared, and I've been as best prepared as I could for what I really didn't know anything about.
Wow. And how long of a lag time until you found out?
I think it was, I did the one, the Tring audition I did first, and then I got a letter a couple of weeks later to say I'd been accepted.
Wow. And that must have been so thrilling for you.
It was, because then I went to do the other audition for the other place in London, Art's Ed, and I'd already got accepted into one. I hadn't found out. I'd found out after I did it. After it was like about a few days before. I'd done the Art's Ed audition a few days before, and then found out I got accepted into Tring. And then I had to speak to the people at Art's Ed and say I've been accepted already here. And they said there was a deadline on when I had to accept the Tring place. So I needed to know from Art's Ed as soon as whether or not they wanted me as well, so I could, you know, I could decide what to do. And they, I think they came back very quickly. Wow. Within that week, and then said, yeah, we'd love to offer you a place as well.
And that's where you went, Art's Ed.
I did. That's why I chose to go to Art's Ed.
And to kind of, so we can get to the work, summarize a very intense experience I'd love to talk to you more about sometime, but how was that experience for you?
Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing. 'Cause like, you took it, it became more professional. It became more serious. I learned about techniques. 2 years.
Yeah.
I learned about techniques that I didn't know anything about. I learned about practitioners and things like that. We started doing physical theater. So many things that I had no idea about. And as I said, I was testing myself against other people who were really good. There were people who were really experienced,
yeah,
who came in, you know, people who were older, people who were kind of already semi-professional and, you know, you were kind of looking at them and going, right, okay, they're doing that really well. That's, I love what they're doing there. That's something that I can learn. And I found it really useful. I found it really beneficial. And so much of that knowledge I still have and use.
Shows in your work. And did ultimately it lead to a showcase, which got you rep?
We did a showcase. We didn't invite any reps or anything to showcases because we were younger.
Okay.
But I was applying to agents kind of in and around that time. And I had an agent based in the north of England, who weren't really based in London because no one else knew who I was. Yeah. I was going off a TV commercial. That's the only piece of work, you know, that I had on video.
Yeah.
Because like none of these pieces I did at Arts Ed were on video. And, you know, kind of the path that they kind of, the route that they kind of pushed us to go on was to go and do another few years at drama school again.
Another Rana. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. So they were kind of pushing everybody to go down that route. And, you know, I had a few ideas about doing that. And then I felt as though I wanted to try kind of the professional side of it a little bit first. I felt as though I wanted to, you know, throw myself in.
An audition.
Yeah. In an audition and kind of, I had that right before we did before we completely finished that, that agency had agreed to sign me, and I'd started to do a couple of auditions towards right at the end. So I got a taste a little bit of what it was like to go and do it in reality. So I think that really kind of drew me in to kind of seeing and exploring that world first.
Yeah.
And
how was that experience? Did you still love it? Cause you know, it can be so intense sometimes. I can only imagine being that age and throwing yourself in.
Well, it's like throwing every stage of this has been like jumping in the deep end, even to Marcus in the air, like every single level has been like thrown in the deep end. But that's like, I think I'm addicted to that.
Yeah. I get it. I'm an adrenaline junkie too. You know, yeah. It's the best way is to sink or swim.
Yeah, exactly. And
yeah,
I enjoy going in somewhere where I know nothing and seeing and working around people who know a lot and then like absorbing it and like learning off. I love watching people and observing and learning that way, as opposed to being kind of like, you know, because sometimes in drama school, you kind of, you know, you're not told about every single acting method. You're told about one and they go, this is the way to act.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of it is true, but then there's a lot of it that's like, there are other ways. And sometimes like, I think you can get a little bit masked by it. You know, the concept of like following every single step of one method and then getting completely locked in on that without, and then you lose freedom and things like that. So, you know, going into the deep end and watching and observing as opposed to being kind of told, and it was kind of interesting, and I loved it. And I, you know, I think it still, you know, it made me who I am today, because you know, you make mistakes.
Yeah.
And you know, you learn from mistakes. And I think that's an incredibly important part of the journey, to make mistakes and learn from them.
Yeah.
And
to commit and to fail is the only way to get better.
Yeah.
And were you happy with the auditions you were getting? Do you feel like, you know, even though maybe you didn't get the role, like you felt good about the work that, or started to at least feel good about the work you were putting in the rooms?
Yeah. I mean, there was like, it was a mix of like short films and some more commercials and things that were coming my way. And I was kind of excited to be auditioning for anything.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't really, at that age, I had no opinion on what anything was. I just loved being you know, the process of someone wanting to see me for something and go in and go, hey, I'm here. What do you want me to do? You know, I'll do what you want me to do. I just love that whole entire process. That was what I was like really drawn to. And I got like right after I left, actually, I got a short film called Oakwood, which was the first ever sort of professional thing that I did. And that was like another jump into the deep end, because it was like a short film for the BBC where I was the lead.
Wow.
And there was a lot I could relate to with the script. And I remember actually going to the audition, and there was like, that was the first audition I went to where I saw a load of other people who I kind of had seen on TV, recognized, and was like, oh, these people, I know these people. These people are working, they're working as, you know, as actors in that time, as child actors. And I felt really inexperienced. And I remember they all seemed to know, like the casting director, they knew everybody. Yeah. And I remember thinking, I don't know anybody. And I just remember sat there thinking, oh, I feel like, you know, I feel like I'm like the guy they're just seeing for the sake of it, you know?
Yeah.
What you say?
Oh, I was going to say, do you feel like booking that really helped you find your confidence being the lead in this BBC thing? And, you know, that must've been an amazing experience for you.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, cause as I said, I went in with like this kind of whole thing of like, everybody's so experienced here and I'm not, and reading the script, I was drawn to the fact, cause it was about this kid who had left this sort of smaller town and wanted to come to London and be a musician. So there was a lot that I could relate to. And I really enjoyed about the story. So there was that element of it that I really hung on to, and obviously doing it, I did one audition and then they told me to come back for a callback, which wasn't actually a callback. I'd got the part, but it was a chemistry test with the person playing my sister, but they didn't tell me. Wow. Until I got there, I went and sat in the waiting room and I was like, there's no one else here. It was just like six girls. And I was like, this is really weird. And then they called me in and they were like, oh yeah, you've got it. We're going to do screen tests with the chemistry test with your sister. And I was like,
wow,
I didn't really understand.
Cast, you crushed it, dude.
But you know, what was really interesting about that entire process was that there was a couple of things, cause I didn't first at all, there was a large comedic element. Yeah. In that short film, and I didn't really at all recognize it until the moment that we watched the screening of it and people started laughing, and I was like, what are you laughing at? This is a serious drama. And they were like, this is hilarious. And I was like, what? And I didn't understand it, and I was like, oh my god, this is really sort of dry humor. And I didn't, you know, I didn't understand or read any of that at the time when we were filming it. I had no idea. And also I found out after we finished filming on the last day, our writer came to visit us, and the writer was explaining to me how this story was very close to his heart. And he was telling me about where he came from. And he grew up in a town called Worcester, the same town that I came from. And not only that, we actually went to the same school.
Wow.
So really, really weird. We both went to the same school. We both came from the same
Divine.
Town. We both had the same, you know, ambitions, and it was a weird moment. But we, you know, it must've been what, you know, kind of, you know, we both subconsciously related to it in that same way.
That's so beautiful. Thank you for sharing that experience. And, you know, for the sake of time, so we can get to Masters of the Air, you did some really awesome work. You got a chance to play Richard Branson. You did work on Netflix. I imagine, you know, to kind of summarize a bit of time here, was that an incredible experience to really start working?
Yeah. I just said every time it was like a step, and, you know, Catastrophe was always the first moment, that I felt like I was getting involved in a real, you know, cause I came in season three, and at that point it was a really well established, show, and, you know, everybody was starting to get really known from it. And I came in and I was a nobody, and I was, you know, I felt really entrusted in a similar way to the way Garth kind of put that kind of trust in me, as if say, you know, you can do this. I felt that from Sharon and Rob in Catastrophe, where they were like, you know, you were perfect for this part. You know, I felt that kind of, you know, presence of being there for longer than being like a smaller, insignificant part in something. It was the first time I kind of felt like I had a character that we could develop and
you
have
show
some fun
what,
with.
All the skills that you've amassed throughout the years.
Yeah. And it was testing comedy again. And that was the first moment that I kind of felt a little bit more, you know, secure about the concept of what I was doing and that I was vaguely okay at it, you know?
and then you're amazing. You're like me. You're hard on yourself. And I imagine then it must have been cool for your friends and your family to see you on this, you know, amazing show and that reception to kind of really open doors for you. And perhaps did that lead to this audition for Masters of the Air?
I suppose everything leads to.
True. It all matters.
Because I don't think anything I've done before was anything remotely like Quinn. So I don't think any, and I had, as you said, I don't know whether you've seen it, but I had incredibly long hair, shoulder length hair. Yeah. So everything I'd done before, I looked a lot different and played a lot different roles. So Masters of the Air was a real pivot.
I'm curious to ask you, because as an actor and any actor listening, sometimes, you know, I mean, it really depends on your agent, but the projects you're with, just because of where we are now with social media, sometimes they go under fake names and you don't really know what you're auditioning for. Did you know that it was Spielberg, Tom Hanks, Band of Brothers Pacific, new show?
I did. Yeah, I did. I did. I got the, it was under the working title of, I think it was called Whirlwind.
Okay.
So, but I knew that it was Steven Spielberg, it was Tom, it was Gary, and it was going to be kind of about the Air Force, and it was going to be, you know, the third installment of kind of that Band of Brothers Pacific franchise kind of thing. So I did know that going into it.
How did you feel when you got that audition? Because that's the audition ever. I mean, you talk about E.T., man, this is full circle right here. I mean, I can't imagine it must have been more surreal than that.
Well, you know, I had extremely long hair at the time, and you kind of create this image of what a military, you know, guy looks like. You know, you have this kind of image of like a really well-built kind of guy with short hair. And obviously I was not that. I was very slender and I had long hair. So I was like, there's just no way that they're going to see this character in me. Yeah. But I was like, you know, this is just so amazing. It was so like the idea of anything Steven Spielberg, Tom Hanks coming into my inbox was just spellbounding, you know, and fascinating. So, you know, I put myself on tape and obviously made the conscious decision that I needed to kind of, you know, I slicked my hair right back into this sort of very indiscreet ponytail to try and, so you couldn't see it. I tried to kind of hide the long hair as much as I could. I kind of tried to sort of look as well built as I could. And, you know, I sort of went down a sort of tougher route with the character because I knew I needed to kind of show a tougher side, you know, at least and try and show them that I could kind of fit myself into this world, because I knew that on paper, it didn't look very, it didn't look like we matched. Obviously when you find out later on though, that the World War II guys at that time, they weren't very well built.
And they were so young, you know,
and they were so young. And you come to realize that when you look into it more and because as you say, they were just guys that were thrown in and they had no training. They had no, you know, they had no experience of military before they just turned up there and started, you know, fighting.
And once you sent the tape in, did you feel good about it at least? Or were you still kind of like, I don't know.
Well, I did. Yeah, I did the tape once, and my agent came back to me and was like, "Yeah, it's good, but just, you know, you're looking over there. Can you do it again? But just look closer to the camera." So they made me redo it. I redid it, and then I felt good about it. I felt good about it, and I was like, again, in the same way that I went into, you know, kind of my drama school audition, I felt very confident that I'd shown them as, you know, much as I could to show that I could kind of portray a guy in the army. You know, I felt, you know, I'd shown as much as I wanted to show. And I felt very good about it. I sent it in, and a couple of weeks later, they came back to me with some notes from the director, and they were like, you know, can you do this new scene with these notes? And I put myself on tape again, did it. And I did that. I must have done that tape like 10 times. I must have done it so many times. Like, I just, because at that point, like, you send the first tape in with a little bit of like, okay, I can, this is very unlikely.
Boomerang
can,
it, so to speak. Yeah, yeah.
I can show them what I can show them. And then when someone comes back and goes, oh, no, we actually liked you. It's like, oh, no, the pressure just builds. It's like, then all of a sudden you realize who you're working for. And it's like the stakes just rise.
Yeah.
And then you want to get it right. So, yeah, I did that tape a lot of times.
Wow.
And it's that you have that. I had definitely had that moment when you start watching them back and it's like, haven't really changed a lot. So, I haven't really done a lot different there, Kai. It's like, you know.
Well, when you got it, how did you feel?
Yeah, I just remember screaming. Like, my agents rang me and I missed their call. And I rang them back and then they text me. It was like, we're going into this meeting. We'll call you after. So I had an hour's wait of like not knowing, like, because they never, you know, they, it was a group call, you know, that doesn't always happen.
Close the deal. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, you kind of didn't know. It's like something's going on. And we kind of knew that, you know, they'd been on air and there was like, you know, possibility. So I was like, oh my God, what is it? And then maybe, oh, I had to wait for an hour for them to get out of this meeting and call me back. And yeah, as soon as they told me, I was like, yeah, man.
Oh man, yeah. That's so awesome. And you know, I have friends that were on Band of Brothers in the Pacific. You listened to an episode. And did you guys go to a boot camp, so to speak, to prep for this?
We did. And actually leading on from the getting the part, I actually didn't know what the part was, you know, because the sides that I had were
dummy sides.
Yeah, well, they were sides for a red sides for, a character that was like an indescript. And then I read one scene of Quinn, for the callback, which I did on Zoom after the second tape. And it was the salt shaker scene in episode one or two. And that was the only scene that I had. And there was no description of kind of Quinn or what journey he goes on. So I had no idea. I was just so satisfied and happy to be part of this group. So I was cast as Quinn. We went to boot camp. There was like
you, Austin, Callum, Anthony, everyone.
Everyone was there. There was us guys, and there was I think there was about 40 guys there. Initially 40, 50 guys, and we were kind of Captain Dale Dye, who did the boot.
Dale Dye's a legend. I'm so glad it was Dale.
Yeah, Captain Dale Dye, the legend that is.
That must have been cool, man. Wow.
And the Pacific boot camps as well. It was. And like, I remember getting a call from production like a week before we were doing boot camp. And they were like, you know who's doing boot camp, right?
I think he did Apocalypse Now too.
He did so many. Like, I didn't know at that point who Captain Dale Dye was. And they're like, it's Captain Dale Dye. And I was like, okay. And I was like, and then I went into this whole like, oh my God. And there's YouTube videos and we're doing this training. And it's like, whoa, we're in for something here. And as you say, he's literally been the military guy for so many of these iconic films that portray the military so well. And he's a really, you know, he's a real stickler for detail. Like if you got something wrong, you had to be done. We had to look like we'd been trained for a large period of time. And, you know, that was his job. It was an incredible privilege to have that, you know, what the show provided in terms of us being able to have that knowledge and that training. You know, we had 2 weeks of boot camp. And at the time, you know, in reality, you're learning about things like, you know, marching and turning and standing in squadrons, how you stand in a square, and all these little details that, you know, in reality, we actually don't do in the show, but it's just so important to have that kind of subconscious knowledge of how you would march, what you would have done, how you, it's about being a team, being a unit, understanding who your other squadrons are and understanding about, you know, we did a lot of history as well about what these guys would have been doing in their days off when, you know, when they go days off into London, and then obviously the harrowing events that they went through up in the air, you know, disarming a bomb and arming a bomb and shooting a 50 caliber machine gun, in a, you know, we did boot camp because it was during COVID.
Yeah.
We had to find an incredibly large space to fit these kind of 40 guys in. so we could equally space them, you know, call it to 2 meters in front, 2 meters to the side. So we were all kind of in this. So we found this massive, they found this massive sports hall, which was next to a nursery. And we were in this huge space, all with masks on and everything. So you couldn't really initially tell, you know, who everybody was. And on the last week, we shot these outside the back of the hall. They had these three 50 caliber machine guns set up with blanks in them. And it was like, this is a really weird experience.
Wow.
Yeah. Because we didn't expect it. We didn't know it was going to happen. Captain Dell was, I was just like, you know, we're going to go outside. I got a surprise for you, you know, and we all marched outside and it was like three guns just lined up and we learned how to load them, reload them, you know, and fire them. And they're very, you know, you felt the weight of
the project. You know,
no, and the gun. The gun.
God, literally the weight. Okay.
Yeah. The gun is scary, but also the weight of the project because, you know, what an incredible thing to be able to set up and allow us to do and allow us to learn. But again, it was incredibly useful to have leading into holding one in it because we couldn't, bizarrely, we shot them there, but where we were located in our studio, we couldn't shoot them for real because of there was some rule that we couldn't actually shoot them for real. But obviously, having that predated knowledge, you know, helped because you understood the weight, you understood how it, you know, what happened when you fired it, and you know, everything about that boot camp was so influential in everything that we did when we actually started filming.
And talk to me about starting filming. I imagine you had all of Quinn's scripts before you started.
No.
Wow. How did you work like that then?
So when I auditioned, I knew I was, and when I got the part, I was Quinn. That's all I knew. I didn't know his full name.
Yeah.
And then it was the second week of boot camp that I learned that he was Sergeant William Quinn. So I had his name, and everybody in this show plays a real person. So there is a database of every member of World War II Air Force that you could go and have a look at and research. So once I had his full name, I was able to kind of do a little bit more digging into who he was as a person, but I still had no script. I had no knowledge of what we were doing. I found out on the very last day of boot camp that we were going on a journey. That's what they told me.
But not like, what journey yet?
No, they were like, oh, you know, we're going to do this thing with you. It's going to be like a little journey and, you know, episode 3, it's going to be fun. And that was literally what they said. And then it was, I think it was Callum who said to me, we did a set tour on the last day. And Callum said to me, oh, have you seen your stuff? It's really cool. I was like, no, I haven't seen it. He's like, it's cool, man. You know, because he'd read it at that point.
Of course. Let me read your script.
So I was like, you know, I was getting all these kind of like, you know, drops of information about what kind of journey I was going on, but not really a lot of detail. So kind of in terms of building a character, for me, it was all based on Sergeant William Quinn's information that I could find online, which was where he was from, Spokane, Washington, and that he was an enlisted man. So he wasn't an officer, so he wasn't trained. So, you know, it was kind of building knowledge of, you know, what Spokane was like at the time, reading newspaper articles and understanding and watching films that he'd have been watching at the time, listening to music that he'd been watching at the time, and building that subconscious memory that, you know, when you have those moments where you just sat, you know, in reality, you just sit there and you think about what you watched last night, last week.
Yeah.
I just wanted to make sure that I was in a place where I could sit there in a scene or whatever and just have a knowledge of the films that were out at the time or the films I watched last year, just that, you know, that anchoring back to normality because we're in such a dangerous place. I that was something I wanted to like have as an anchor, like, oh, just remember, you know, these films were, you know, remember the good things about these amazingly funny films and Abbott and Costello, Laurel and Hardy, you know, all those kind of amazing pieces of art, you know, around at the time. So that was kind of the work that I did before I knew the story. I did all that work and kind of building kind of subconscious knowledge. And then when we started shooting, I then got the episode scripts and started to find out about Quinn's arc.
And that must have been so fun. I mean, where did you feel like at this point when you started shooting, you guys already were kind of a family or friend, so to speak?
Yeah, that's what I think the boot camp, it just completely leveled everything out. Everybody was just like going in cold. Everybody went in, and then we all became a unit. We were all fighting for each other. We were all fighting for the same, idea of portraying these guys in the most accurate way that we could, in terms to do them justice and to show the level of respect that we need to have for these guys. And obviously then finding out about Quinn's storyline,
spoilers here for those, episode's been out, but you get to go on this incredible mission. Basically I'll summarize, like, and correct me if you think I'm wrong, but something goes wrong on a flight and you have to escape via parachute, and you get stuck in a foreign country. And talk to me about first that, because obviously with Band of Brothers and Pacific, those were on land. So much of Masters of the Air is in the air. Talk to me about that experience and shooting that, because, obviously I imagine you weren't really in the sky, but how was that experience of bringing authenticity to like abandoning a plane during a crisis and having to parachute out of it, because it looked so epic on screen,
We did. So obviously we weren't in the air, but we were elevated. So for the parachute jump, I didn't know about anything, as you say, even when I had the scripts and sort of, it was so vaguely written. It was like, I think it was like, Quinn jumps, like something so thin and just like Quinlan, or it's just like Quinlan's, something so thin that you don't even think about the concept of doing a parachute jump. You just don't, it doesn't even cross your mind until I'm sat at home one day and the phone rings and it's a no caller ID. And I'm like, who is this? And I pick up the phone and, I'm in my American accent at this point. It's like, hello. And he's like, Hey, Kai, I'm Lee Morrison, stunt coordinator on Masters of the Air. Just want to talk to you about the parachute jump you're going to be doing. And I was like, what? He's like, yeah. It's very simple. It's basically just the same thing we did with Daniel on Bond. And I was like, what?
I was like, what a drop, dude. What a day.
I was like, hold on a minute. As I said, going way back to those videos that I did as a kid with my friend, I was the uncoordinated one. I was the one who did everything wrong. I didn't do stunts well. Yeah. I did them as a joke. And having such a prolific stunt coordinator call you and go, oh, yeah, you're going to be doing a parachute jump. And it was just like, whoa. It's like, I want to bring you in for training. And that was kind of the start of the whole arc of training for me. So we went and did sort of training inside first about dropping from heights.
Did you go tandem to get the experience, or no, you didn't have to?
How do you mean tandem?
No,
because this was about learning how to, because a round parachute from World War II in the 40s is a completely different type of parachute to what you use nowadays, because you've got absolutely no guides on it and it's round, so it doesn't catch the air in the same way. They are the most uncontrollable types of parachute that you can possibly have. Wow. So it was about understanding the idea of just being dropped and coming down to a safe and how to land without breaking my legs. That was the first kind of thing that we learned. And then we actually did the full drop from about 100 feet off a scissor lift in the air, and then we parachute down into a field, and we never landed ever where we were supposed to land, because these round parachutes just don't catch the air in the way that they should. So we did some things at heights, and the crash that itself we did in a rotisserie rig, which is basically a giant washing machine, really.
I think they had one in Inception.
They did.
Yeah.
They did.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. It's exactly the same thing. And we had a plane fuselage in it. And again, as soon as I did the parachute jump, I thought that was it. And then we just keep going on. I keep filming stuff. And then I saw Lee Morrison one day in the studio. We just crossed paths. He's like, hey, man. He's like, you seen what we've got coming up with you? I was like, nope. And he was like, it's cool. And I was like, what are we doing now? Oh, and they just kept throwing more and more stuff at me. And every time we did it, they kind of gave me this space. And you know, they, I was so grateful for the amazing guys on it, you know, Lee Morrison and Dave Grant and Will, my, you know, they were able to sort of sit there and train me and take the, we had the time, the show gave us the time to kind of see if I was able to do it myself, to see if I could do, you know, what they wanted and, you know, and see if they could train me. And I was very grateful that I always felt very safe in their hands. They had every, you know, best interest and, you know, I always felt like a very safe space. I was very grateful for them for that. And then they don't get anywhere near enough, you know, respect for what
That's
they do.
Kind.
And you know, those guys are incredible.
Going from the go-kart track to parachuting out of a plane, I imagine you must have been really just so thrilled with your decision at that point to give acting a try.
Yeah, it was it was a nice moment. And I think, as you say, it was a real thing that, because it was really unexpected, because I always thought of myself as this kind of uncoordinated guy who wouldn't do it. And I just remember thinking every time that I did it, like, no one's going to believe that I'm doing the stunts on this show. And, you know, no one's going to believe that I've done the parachute jump and I've been in this rotisserie rig and we've learned about being sucked to the side and zero gravity and, you know, wire work and all these amazing things that they gave me the opportunity to do. And
your work is incredible. And you get a love interest.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, I think, you know, that's, you know, it's the Comet line itself. I knew nothing about the idea of the resistance.
I didn't either. I'm American. I'm sorry.
No, but I feel so, you know, privileged to be able to be the one to kind of give some light to this story, because I think so often we look at, you know, war and world war as a very male dominated, you know, very, you know, won by the guys kind of thing. And when you actually look down, this is a part of history I knew nothing about. And it's like, wow, these amazing women, because the Comet line was 70% women, almost all sort of late teenagers. And like, they were volunteers and they saved so many lives and brought so many airmen, British and American, back to safety. And, you know, it's not a widely, like everybody I talk to about it, it's not a widely known part of history. And it's like, I feel so privileged to be able to, you know, to some degree tell that part of history, which, you know, more than deserves to be told.
No, it's amazing. And I think the one thing the show incredibly achieved is showing that, you know, and how involved they were and quintessential to the process. And then, you know, obviously, you know, how does it feel having shot this thing, wow, almost 3 years ago to finally have it out now? Is it surreal? You know, it must be so cool.
Yeah, it's, I'm very much looking forward to it. I mean, I spent a long time really, because there's a lot of people in this show. And
Austin Butler, Callum Turner, you know,
and
when you, Anthony Boyle, all superstars. It's awesome.
You know, and like at this point, you know, anyone who hasn't seen it, I've for the last couple of years, you know, you tell people you've done the show and they're like, I had a meeting earlier this year with the director and he said, "What have you been up to?" I said, "I shot Masters, just, you know, shot Masters of the Air." And he said, "Well, yeah, well, everyone's in that though." I was like,
what the okay. Hell? Oh my God. Get out of here, bro.
Wait like, till you see.
Yeah.
That's kind of been a very similar thing that's happened a few times. And, you know, people don't understand that, you know, I was like, "Oh, I'm in Masters of the Air." And it's like, they don't, you know, I haven't been able to express and show people that we've got something quite nice. And I feel very excited to finally have it out there.
Your work is incredible in it, man. And especially knowing you were doing all the stunts, I'm so proud of you, man. And I know your parents and the whole world is too. And
thank
it's
you,
such man. Incredible work, man. And I, you know, that leads me into my next question is, what's next for you? I mean, I imagine coming down from a project like this, as someone who did a period piece, I know how hard of a transition that can be. So I'm glad you got something you're working on. Are you having fun on, can you talk about that at all or?
Not that particular one I think you're referring to at the
got
moment.
It. Okay. All right. Well,
there will be cool things
coming out, you know, and talk to me now about what is it that you want to do?
I love doing things that test me and throw me, like, as I said, you know, earlier on, that idea of being thrown in the deep end, things that surprise me. I think, you know, I just love the process of acting, and anything that I can put work into and understand, and that's got factual information that I can delve into, that I can create. I love all things in that world. And I like doing different things to the last thing that I did. And I feel very lucky up to this point that I've been able to kind of maneuver in that way. But I look forward to whatever's next, and I look forward to it to surprising me in that aspect.
Having just beautifully portrayed American, any interest in coming here and perhaps giving, where are you able to audition for a lot of American stuff, given how much we shoot abroad in the UK?
Yeah. I mean, people seem to like me in an American accent, and it surprises more people. This voice, it's quite weird. In Masters of the Air, I stayed in the accent for the entire year. Wow. And about 80 or 90% of the cast have never heard this version of me. So
that's awesome.
It's a surprise for a lot of people. So I'm very used to doing that. And I just love being different people. That's what I love. Being different people.
I was going to say, any interest in doing something in the West End or even a play, perhaps?
Absolutely. I would love to do a play and sort of. There's nothing really that's sort of crossed my radar. Not that I haven't wanted it to. It's just not really been, because, you know, I've built up credits in the film and TV, you know, TV world up now, and I'd love to do some theater here.
Yeah. Well, I'll have to write a play. Perhaps maybe we'll make it a movie about us being Formula One drivers, and we'll go to Le Mans and finally get to live our dreams, brother.
Let's do it, Ryan. Let's do it. Yeah.
Final question. And I ask every guest this final question, and I know it seems intense and deep and loaded, but don't make more of it than it is, you know, kind of for all the actors listening out there, you know, given how crazy this business can be. We're in a weird time coming out of this strike. Any advice for the actors listening out there?
I think something I've always stuck to is, you know, make sure that when you're around people, make sure no one's working harder than you. You know, if they're working harder than you, you know, you got to work harder. You know, you got to make sure that you keep putting everything in and keep doing what you can. There is no right way to kind of do this career. Like, I was for a long time looking at other people and how they, you know, the route that they went, and was like, is that the right way? And I think you eventually come to a point of like, well, everybody's done something different and there is no route. You kind of have to stick to your own belief and have confidence in yourself and what you bring to the table. And that's really what you in the end, I think, makes things work. And having the honest ability to kind of go there and go, this is, I think, what I can bring to this piece. And that's what I've got to, you know, kind of got to be confident with, as opposed to thinking like, what might they want? What might be the thing that they think they want to see from me? Cause that's when you start going down this road of like following other people and trying to do other things that actually don't look realistic. So it's confidence. It's about working hard and it's about believing. And, you know, it's a crazy career. It's a crazy career. And I think people say to me sometimes, like, are you enjoying it? And I was like, if you don't enjoy this, you don't do it, because it's crazy. Like,
I agree, you know, man. Oh, yeah. Man.
If you don't love the concept of acting, then it's a silly thing to do.
Well, Kai Alexander, this was such an immense pleasure, and thank you so much for opening up and sharing so much of your story. It was incredible, and dude, I feel like I've known you for a long time now, and I'm proud of you, man. And I do hope we get a chance to work together sincerely one day, and please come back anytime.
Absolutely, Ryan. I mean, it's been a great pleasure. I'm a huge fan of the show, and you know, I've listened to some great, you've done some great interviews with people, and I am now very glad to be part of that amazing list. And
it's an honor, man. And I'm looking forward to seeing all that's to come from you. So let's end it with a to be continued.
To be continued.
All right, brother. Much love. Mm-hmm.
If you like the show, rate, review, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Thank you for listening.